Hey, Mother Knows Best listeners, you can find us every Wednesday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to 'Cause I Said So, your favorite mother-daughter podcast.
Hello, Alex.
Mom, you're back in New York.
Yes, I'm back.
How was your break? How was your week off?
It was good. A lot of work. I had my dad turn 90, so we had a little party for him. A surprise party for him. Yeah, he loved it.
He was so happy.
Was he really?
And surprised. He was really surprised and very happy. He hasn't been feeling very good, so.
Is that the nursing home? Is that what it's called? Assisted living?
It's retirement home, assisted living, or I don't think the whole thing is assisted living. I just found out.
Mm.
So it's independent living and assisted living. Sorry.
It's okay. So we were on a Zoom call and he came over, like, so my mom was there in person and my cousins and aunts were there in person, but like the kids that don't live there, we were on Zoom and he walked over and we were like, surprise people. And he just went like, and turned away. And we were like, awesome.
He did?
I don't think he could see us. I don't think he knew what was happening, but it was really funny.
Someone took a picture of him when he was like looking at it and trying to look up at the screen. That's why he probably looked away. He was looking at you on the screen. It was hard to see you all. I don't know what I did, but when my niece changed the background.
Yeah, that was funny.
I couldn't figure out how to get it back. Also, I didn't mean to Skype you. I meant to Zoom, and I couldn't work Skype anymore. I was thinking I was on Zoom.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Okay, quick pause for a Mamita's ad. So Mamita's is our favorite Cool Crisp because it's the perfect summer drink. Cool Crisp tequila seltzer made with real hard tequila, which I think I've decided that's the key.
It is the key, and the natural flavors.
Natural flavors. Mm-hmm. They're 95 calories. They're naturally gluten-free, less than 1.5 grams of sugar.
And a lot of flavor. A
lot of flavor. What are the flavors, Mom?
Spicy margarita, paloma, which is my favorite.
That's your favorite.
Mango.
Pineapple.
Tequila sunrise.
Oh, I love the tequila sunrise.
I have only had it once, but I like the spicy marg a lot.
I'm a Paloma girl.
And then there's lime.
Yeah, there's lime. The lime ones are good.
They're good.
We should start doing blind taste tests of these to see if you can know what flavors which.
Okay.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
You can get them at Publix, Jewel, Osco, Target, Walmart. Obviously, drinkmamitas.com has a store locator. You can get them on GoPuff. So we'll link the store locator and you can click it and then you can say, where do I find Mamita's near me? And then you'll know.
Yep.
So, Mother, speaking of you Skyping us instead of Zooming us, what is your boomer move of the week?
My boomer move of the week is when I was at home, I went through the Starbucks line, like drove, because I don't walk, I had to drive. Mm-hmm. I had the dogs with me, we were going to get a coffee and a puppuccino, and I must have been doing something on my phone, so when I get up to pick up my order, and she scans it, and she's like, what did you have? And I'm like, oh, my God, I didn't order.
Oh, whoops.
Yeah, so I went through the drive-thru, and I didn't order. I don't know how that happened. Like, that's a total boomer airhead move. And I was like, she's like, I don't know how to credit you. I go, that's okay. I'll just pay for the guy behind me.
Oh, that's nice.
So I said, and I'm gonna drive around.
Wait, so you went through the drive-thru and never ordered?
Right.
Oh, that's
bad. Yeah, really bad.
So you just drove past it. You were in a zone.
Well, I don't know. Just whatever I did. There was a long line, so we were stopping and going and stopping and going. I don't know how it happened. I must have just been like, dee, 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 dee. Anyway, I said, I'm going to go inside and order it because I'm so embarrassed and pay for the guy behind me. But when I drove around, I was like, oh, well, you know what? The line's gone. I'm just going to drive back through the drive-thru. So I go back through the drive-thru, and I order this time, and I pull up, and I go to pay, and she goes, it's okay. The guy in front of you paid. So I started the pay it forward, and then I was the recipient of the pay it forward.
Okay, that's actually awesome.
I know, and bad at the same time.
You should make a TikTok of that just telling that story. The internet would like that.
They would.
That everyone went ahead and said, okay, I'll pay for the guy behind me.
Yeah.
Everybody in line did that.
And there was no one behind me to pay for. So
you were like, okay, great. So you basically just paid for your drink.
Yeah.
How about that? Okay, that's hilarious.
It's hilarious and embarrassing. I was like, oh, wow.
Oh, whoops. Ladies and gentlemen that are listening or watching on YouTube, today we have a guest on, Annie McCarthy, who is Large's wife. They're part of the OG Barstool.
Mm-hmm.
Large, obviously, we had on last week. The two of them together do the Twisted History podcast. But my favorite part of them is the journey from Wall Street to Barstool.
Uh-huh.
Like, in what world have we ever heard that?
So I like her stories about Wall Street and working for her dad.
I know. It's
so interesting. Yeah.
So she worked for her dad, who unfortunately passed away in 9/11. And then she was the recipient mm-hmm. of his company. And she tells all these stories about old Wall Street, new Wall Street. And it's so fun to hear her talk about it because she likes the old way better. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. And now she's here at Barstool. And she's the one that encouraged her husband to initially take the job here. And she asked him, which we heard last week, but if you didn't hear it, I'll tell you. She said, if you hit the lottery tomorrow and money wasn't a thing, would you go back to work for J.P. Morgan or would you work at Barstool? And he was like, oh, probably Barstool. So yeah,
they're a true team.
Yes.
In a family, the relationship team. Yeah. They work together with everything. Happiness.
The way they talk about each other mm-hmm. is very sweet. So without further ado, Annie McCarthy, welcome to the show. So last week we interviewed your husband, Large, and he kept saying, he's like, you're really interviewing the wrong spouse. Annie's a lot cooler than I am. And through the little tidbits he gave us, I would agree. You might be a little cooler.
Take that.
He gave you a lot of credit.
I loved being called the sexual dynamo.
Yeah, that was really good. I like that he threw that out there.
He made sure I heard that too.
He's like, hey, listen to the episode. Uh-huh. You guys are like five of the views. I like that. And the other time, the other encounter we had with you, I loved what you said because you asked my mom, how old are you? But I think we said she's 58. And then you said, well, how old do you feel?
I couldn't believe that you were 58.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like that, because you're 10 years older than I am. And I hope I look half as good as you.
Oh, well, that's sweet.
Honest
thank
to
you.
God. I mean, sweet.
You're on a good trajectory.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
This is going to put you on the spot, but I've realized we need to ask you this. We always start with a boomer move, which we've already done.
A boomer move.
It's like admitting the age, kind of. Like sometimes, like last week, she thought it was 2021. You know, do you have any off the top of your head?
But she's not a boomer.
No, but we. I mean,
but it's a boomer move if you're a mom, kind of thing.
Sometimes I think I'll go back to like an old movie or something. Like I'll quote something from a movie that's like from the 70s. You know, like my kid will come out with like terrible hair, and I'll be like, "Oh, that's some bad hat, Harry." And like what does that mean, Mom? And you know, it's a line from Jaws when the old guy is sitting on the beach and the cop. Roy Scheider said, uh-huh. Is that his name, Roy Scheider? He says to the guy, oh, that's some bad hat. Harry's got an ugly hat on. But that's what I'll say to my kids.
How many times did you watch Jaws to catch that line?
Oh, it's like my favorite movie.
Because I've seen it a lot and I don't remember that.
I know, but I think it's like it's a quotable, like that movie's got a ton of
it
them,
It does
right?
have, a, it had, does have, we're going to need a bigger boat.
We're going to need a bigger boat, you know, smile, you son of a bitch. Like, I love those.
You do? Okay, I've never seen it. I need to watch it because these one-liners were good.
It's good.
It's kind of cool. You know what a cool thing about that? This is why I love Twist History, but that movie, the first scene, like everybody knows the iconic scene. She's running down the beach and he's following her and they take off all their clothes. It's like 3 a.m. And then she's the first person attacked by Jaws. And when you hear her, she's got these blood-curdling screams. It's because when she's being thrashed around in the water just for the scene, it actually like dislocated her hip and she's actually screaming in pain. And I think she like they had to get permission from her to leave that in.
Wow. Really? Yeah. Really?
I did not know that.
It's kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
But that's what Twisted History is, like all little like weird stuff.
Wow.
Like that.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Let's talk about what you do at Barstool as the intern, which
as
is
the
a
intern.
Joke.
I swear, I think until Vindog got hired, he was the oldest intern at first, and I think I am now. But so Large and I had always, whenever we would drive into Brooklyn, and it's kind of how I know he went into a little bit of Take a Report, but that's how it started. We would drive into Brooklyn or we would drive somewhere and he would go on these rants in the car for like an hour. And I'd be like, oh my God, you have to just write this down to get this stuff out of your head. So one thing led to another, and that's how he started one of the avenues that led to his Take a Report. But Twisted History, we would start talking about all these weird things. We'd go off on all these strange tangents about actual things that happened and how, you know, everybody, history just reports this side. Nobody really knows the obscure side of things. Mm-hmm. And then he started talking with Gaz one day, I think it was maybe 2018 or 2019, that he wanted to do a history podcast. So Large said, can my wife do it with me? So he hosts, and sometimes I'll fill in for Vibs if he's out, but I do all the research.
So you're the researcher.
The most I do the important research part. And the social.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You do the social too?
I do.
Okay. I wonder
John,
who did it.
Like John it produces it. John Kelly's our producer. And so he edits and puts everything. He's amazing, by the way. And but I do the social for Insta and Twitter.
So do you have, is this your full-time job currently?
It's like, I laugh saying that I'm an intern, but it legitimately monopolizes 99% of my time. Oh. So, like, I'll tell my kids, like, I'm working now. And I'm like, who do I get to see? Like, how dare I see that? I don't get a paycheck.
Right. You're like, I'm not, well, but
I'm waiting
still
for them to, like, throw that in my face. Yeah. I'm waiting for them to be like, oh, yeah, right, really, Mom? But it's cool because you can do it from anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I can take my kids to a game, and while they're practicing, I can research. I can put up a tweet while I'm in the parking lot picking somebody up, or if my daughter's on set, I can go do something here and there. Like, it, I can.
But generally, how long does it? What? How much research do you do for each show? I would think it would be a lot.
I'd say I probably book anywhere, probably anywhere between 20 and 30 hours a week.
Gosh. Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Wow, what day of the, and then how do you brief Large and Vibs, or what do you do there?
So the way we do it is I'll throw out a bunch of ideas, like, and see what everybody likes. And then Large usually was like, yes, no, yes, no, yes, yes, no, no. You know, like, and we'll pick which ones we like. And sometimes, like, they really will feed into each other. Like, you know, if it's Generals, you know, we can do something on Auschwitz because, it, you know, between Pat and, like, you can always find a way to coincide with each other. But so I'll put a bunch of facts together, and, like, usually I'll give them somewhere between 30 and 45 pages of just stuff, and then Large will pick out what he likes from it, and then he'll feed off of that, and he'll build on that, and he puts it together. He writes out a phenomenal script every week. It's just, it's like, it really is a research paper, the way he just takes the facts.
That's a lot of time, too, and he's busy with a lot of other things. Yeah.
So, and it's, I think that's why it works, because we talk about it so much together. But we would have done it anyway. Mm-hmm. So that's just kind of what we would do.
I love that.
So it works out. And I think it's good for our kids, because at the same time, now they're hearing, it's not like if he's preparing when he was on Barstool Breakfast, it's not like he's talking about what alcohol he's going to make for Gentleman's Friday.
Yeah, right.
Like, we can actually have this discussion at the dinner table because it's an actual crazy thing that happened in history.
And your kids are probably interested in it, because even what you just said about Jaws, like, you just kind of go, well, who wouldn't want to know that?
Totally.
Yeah,
that's an in-depth combo.
Yeah.
And definitely. And I had a teacher, one of my teachers in high school, Mr. Sawyer, was the best. And you would come into class on Monday, and you couldn't wait to sit in his class, because he would tell you a piece of history, but he would tell you, like, wait till you hear what happened Friday night. And he would just tell you this entire story about, and you were so riveted, like, you couldn't believe what you were hearing. And the class was over like that. But what he was actually doing was teaching you
a history lesson. What a great teacher, yeah.
But you felt like you were hearing it from the perspective of, you know, what did Barbara tell you and what did she tell me? And like, I laugh when my daughter tells me stuff about her girlfriends, because that's exactly what I feel like I'm, like, it's bringing me back to his class, because he really would get you so involved, because you felt like he was spilling the tea.
That's what you said. You were like, I love twisted history, because I just feel like I'm spilling the tea on what happened. It makes it interesting.
Yeah, because history is just fascinating, and, you know, just for so many reasons. And if you don't tell it right, you just sit there and, like, oh God, I gotta get this.
Yeah, it's just memorizing these dates and what happened
please,
here. That's so boring.
Yeah. Right.
But if it's on a test and you're like, oh my God, this is the guy who did that, and he's called the Desert Fox, he got that, like, it's kind of cool.
So, okay, so you're obviously, as the word, scholarly.
Oh, I would. I appreciate that. If I pulled that off, look at me.
But you're doing 20 to 30 hours of research a week. And then you said, I did not know this about you, 18 years on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange.
Yeah.
Before that, will you take us to where you were before, like, college?
So I grew up with a single dad. I moved in with my dad when my parents split up. I was 12, and he worked on the floor of the American Stock Exchange. And so camp and the idea of doing any kind of extracurricular activity was going to work with him. That was it.
Wow.
So, you know, Christmas holiday and stuff like that, I was down on the trading floor writing tickets. I would be, you know, 8 or 9.
The fact that you got to go down there, I guess that would never happen today. Would it?
No.
The
American Stock Exchange was a totally different breed than the New York. And it was much more laid back, so he got away. You know, I could go down there, and they allowed kids. The New York didn't. So when I graduated from high school, he was like, "Oh, you got to go to college." Da da da. So I spent one semester in Boston, and I was like, "So, I grew up with a single dad who owned his own business, who traveled 90% of the time, and now you want me to live in a dorm with an RA? Like,
yeah,
What? No. I have a curfew? I hadn't had a curfew since I was 13. Like, what? This is just not going to happen. So I left that what is it, December? And I was like, this is not for me. And he was like, oh, you have to go. You have to go to college. So I said, all right, here we go again. So he drove me down to Georgia. And I said, don't leave me down here. This is ridiculous. He bought me a bed and a bag and the microwave and all that. I said, this is ridiculous. I'm not going to stay here. He drove away for the 22-hour trip home because we drove down. I got the check back from the dean. I sold the bed and a bag. I sold the microwave. I sold the fridge. I bought myself a plane ticket home. And then I beat him home. And then he wouldn't talk to me for a couple of months. And then I went down to the trading floor to the New York. He was like, well, I'll get you a job, but you got to keep it. And I got you an interview with Prudential. That was like the first thing he said to me after a couple of weeks of not talking to me. And I went for my interview and I started the following Monday. And it was like the worst storm of in years. But
what year was that?
That was 1992.
Okay.
And February of 92. And I had been down there. I never left. I started as an input operator, and then I became a clerk, and then I became a broker.
Wow.
You could not get that job today without a college degree.
No. Wall Street back then, up until I'd say probably 2002, was all about who you knew. It really was. I mean, it's what you knew and your skill set and your education and how quick you learn and your common sense and your book smarts. That all kept you your job. Okay. But a lot of those guys got their jobs because it was like, oh, you know, my buddy's daughter needs a job. My friend's son needs a job.
So but then you had to keep the job.
You had to keep
you
the
had
job.
To, you yeah. had to do a good job to keep the job.
Right. And if you screwed up, believe me, they you know, rode you for it. Like, you got in trouble for it. And I'm being the boss's daughter, because my dad had an operation on the he did have an operation on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange as well, but he only worked on the Amex. He had somebody else running that division for him.
Okay.
So if I did anything, if I stepped out of line in any way, I got total abuse for it.
Well, clarify this for me. What was his business?
He had a $2 operation and on the floor of both exchanges, and then he also had a specialist post out on the American Stock Exchange.
A $2 operation.
So a $2 operation was if you were a company, J.P. Morgan, we'll mm-hmm. say you're a house firm, mm-hmm. you're J.P. Morgan, and I am a $2 operation, and your broker gets busy in America Online, you put up a helper broker, okay. and I would basically charge you $2 for every share I traded.
Okay.
And so, like, I would execute your overflow orders okay. for a big house.
Okay.
So wow. he had started that business back in 67, and it was just on the American Stock Exchange with a company called Neuberger Berman at the time. And then it just built over time.
Do they still have those?
$2 brokers? I think so.
Okay.
I think they curious. Do. But he started that on the floor of the Amex. And it's funny because he always held his Tuesday morning meeting on the corner of Trinity Place. I don't know if you've been down by Trinity Church, like where Alexander Hamilton is buried.
Yeah. Yes.
Trinity Church separates Trinity Place, Church Street. And Broadway.
Uh-huh.
And he started when he started his business in 67, every Tuesday, he'd have like a 15-minute just like meeting of the minds. And then the New York Stock Exchange employees would go through the cemetery to their job. And he'd go to 86 Trinity, which is the Amex. But because after 9/11, they actually named that street corner after him.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
It is really cool because it was originally the original entrance to like the World Trade Center Museum. Uh-huh. So like when you start the tour, like if you do the tour, it wraps around, but it starts at his street at McCarvey Place.
That is cool.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Wow.
He must have done something for that.
He was, well, you had a petition. His sister, my aunt, started the petition, and you had to get so many, I think we had to get something like maybe 10,000 signatures, and we ended up getting something like 150. Like, it was insane.
1,000?
Yeah. Yeah.
Signatures?
We just went, you know, everybody that we knew just took a sheet, and everybody just kept panning sheets in, and it was like, oh my God, we got such a...
What a tribute.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really special. Wow.
He was, they loved him down there. He was hard. Like, he was a tough guy to work for, and he was a tough boss, but he knew what he was doing, and he was very, very good at it, and he was very well respected. So
how did it go when Large hit on his daughter?
Well, you're going to laugh. So... he came down, he was supposed to go to law school and he decided not to. So his dad got him a job with a buddy, like, oh, somebody knows somebody. And it actually wasn't for my dad. It was for a guy that worked next to him. And after a while, nobody would work with my dad because he was really hard. And Large was like, I'll do it. I'll come work for him. So the day he started, I just happened to come down for a visit. And I was like kind of looking at him and I'm like, oh, I was hit immediately. Like I fell in love with him the day that I saw him. And he absolutely despised me. And he, honest to God, he absolutely despised me. And he had a girlfriend and I got the cold shoulder. So I was like, all right, I get it. But I can still fuck, right? Like, I'm not, you know, I can still look. And I'm 20. Like, I have options, but, I.
Yeah.
And so he dated that girl for, like, I think a total of 8 years. So we didn't start, like, I didn't, like, meet him as a single person until 97. And
wait, when did he start working with you?
93.
Okay, wow.
So I waited. I was very patient. Yeah. I was very respectful.
Yes, you were.
And like when I found out that he was single, we just kind of bumped into each other and he was like, oh, you should stop by sometime. So I did. Like when I was in Brooklyn, he just happened to live near my aunt. So I stopped by and it was nice. And then I was like, oh, I'm going to an exhibit, like a museum exhibit. And he was like, okay. Like, he was kind of, like, taken aback by the fact that I asked him do you want to come? But it was kind of just like, oh, hey, we're going. You want to come? And, like, he thought I was way too pushy. And he thought I was way too forward, way too pushy. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you know, you have to back off. Like, you're really invading my space. Okay. And he was so vocal about it that I was like, oh, he's kind of, like, not the guy I thought he was. Like, I was a little bit put off.
Yeah.
But, I'm not thinking from the terms of someone having a relationship for 8 years. I didn't do that. So I don't know what that feels like. So I'm just thinking like, oh, he's kind of creepy. Like, that's not what I was
thinking. Right. Like, well,
that's
what's
not a
the
normal
problem?
Comment that I'm used to. Like, what?
Yeah. Like, and it was just so weird. And then, we had a few like interactions between them, but I kind of was like, you know what? This is not what I thought it was, but that's okay. You know? And I said to him, I'm like, it's cool. I have a date next week. Like, please don't be embarrassed. Don't be uncomfortable that I can take being told no. And then a couple weeks went by and we didn't have any interaction. And he didn't like it. Like, he didn't like it at all. It was bothering him because even though he had just gotten out of a relationship, he had the same attraction to me. He just didn't want to say it because he didn't want to be a rebound thing or anything. So he called me up and I avoided the phone call for like 2 weeks. So finally my mom is like, you have to answer this guy. He keeps calling. So I was like, you know, typical brat, And he's like, do me a favor, just forget everything that's happened and just spend the rest of your life with me. I said, okay. And then we moved in together.
What? Like
two months later, we were engaged 10 months later and we've been married 23 years.
And you just like knew that fast?
Wow.
That fast, yeah.
That is not where I thought that was going.
And we didn't tell my dad right away. Like I didn't say anything because like he would not have approved, but Mike worked with him for so long. Like, he had started with him in 93, and then we started dating in 97. Once we got together, we were inseparable from that moment. And I think that my dad would have really had too much to say, so it was just better not to say anything. And he was terrified of him. He was like, I think your dad's going to kill me,
Yeah.
So we told him, like, maybe after we were dating about 4 or 5 months, and then, 4 months later, Mike's asking him if he can propose. So
oh wow!
It was fun.
Yeah,
it was different, but you know when you know.
Yeah,
right.
You know.
Right.
You know when you know.
Like, mm-hmm. I try to explain that to people all the time. Like, you just know.
Yeah, and you're like, You both knew.
We both knew.
I love that.
We both do. And like, when you like, I'm sure it's the same thing with your husbands. Like, when you're fighting, you know when which one of you is being a jerk. Like, you just know.
Yeah. Yes. You're like, this is going to be bad for you. This isn't a good, like.
It's a pride swallow. Like, all right, it's me. I'm sorry.
I'm the bad one today. Sorry.
I never hear that.
Oh, okay.
No, I never hear it. It was me.
Oh, I'm sure not.
So, I'm the one that doesn't say it that often.
Yeah.
He's a lot better at it than I am.
But he buys you shoes. I love that. I love that he buys you shoes.
He buys me shoes. That's he cute. Buys me. He does all my clothes shopping.
He says you won't do it. Like, you're just not that. And I love that.
I figure, like, I get up and I'm showered by like 7:30, 8 o'clock every day. Like, I'm up, I'm moving. Just because I never want my kids to, like, I don't know. I just always felt like they should see me put together.
Uh-huh.
So I always would get up before them. Get dressed or whatever, but like, well, I was a stay-at-home mom, like everything, and now everything that I've been doing with Twist I can do from home, except on days when I come in. So it's like, I always would get up and I put myself together, but it's like a uniform, you have jeans, you have a t-shirt, mm-hmm. and you have you throw on a pair of sneakers and you drive them to school. But I always had my hair done. I always had my makeup done. But it would drive him crazy because I, before we had kids, I was always like, you know, I love handbags. Like, it's just.
Oh, that's your kryptonite? God,
big time. Big time.
So he buys those? Or do you buy? Do you pick them out? Or does he get a pick?
I think with bags, I'll buy.
Yeah.
But like shoes, and I do, I love shoes. But when I worked on the floor and you were making all that money, like it was for me.
Yeah.
Like, but once you have kids, like you just.
It's hard to go, I'm going to go spend all this money on myself when I'm just kind of staying at home.
Yeah. I can buy three pairs of sneakers like that the kids really want for what I would have gotten. Like I just can't like justify it in my head. So like he'll come home and he'll be like, you know, he'll just have a box on the bed.
Oh, you know,
it's really cute. And he loves it. He loves doing that. So
he seems like he loves doing it.
No,
let him keep doing it.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the math? So you meet him and you guys get married. And of the 18 years, where are we at? Like year nine? Like, did you keep working for nine more years?
Do math now?
Well, I can't even. I've been trying to do it over here. I'm like, I don't know.
Wait, what are you saying? When they had kids?
Once they got, if she was there 18 years, once like her and Large Matt got married, like how many more years
did you work
on
the floor?
I left when my second son was born. I left officially in 2008.
Okay.
2009? It might have been like, it might have been like, you know, 19 and a half. Yeah. I say 18 because it was like a solid 18 that I was down there. But because of what happened with 9/11 and I inherited that company, that, you know, I was the CEO of that for 8 years. So the way that we did it, the way I structured the deal, I sold off the specialist operation first. That was the first thing that I
had
to do. The specialist operation.
Like, okay.
So when you go down to the trading floor and say you decide you want to buy Texas Instruments, you find where that trades. And you find the specialist who trades it and puts the buyers and sellers together.
Okay.
And that person who puts both sides together and gives you how the market is, that person is called the specialist.
Okay.
And that person has a direct contact with the company and the CEO of that company. So if it's General Electric or, you know, whatever it is, the specialist has a direct conversation with the owner of the company and is privy to information, you know, and has to make everything public and is responsible basically for making sure that every trade is executed properly, that it's all captured. That way the SEC can say, I want to see what traded on such and such date at such and such time with however many buyers or sellers that you put together. And they have to produce that. So a specialist is that person.
Okay.
So my dad was a specialist on the floor of the American Stock Exchange with a guy who unfortunately passed away after 9/11. But I think my husband wrote an article about him, John Mulhern. He was pretty impressive. But the first thing I had to do, I sold, was the specialist operation, because that's a lot of capital sitting, because they have to put up their own money to make sure that trades happen. Like if there's no seller and somebody wants to buy, you have to make a principal sale and you have to put up your own capital and you have. So that was very volatile. I didn't want the risk.
Okay.
So I sold that right away, and then. We finished that deal in 2003, and then I sold the New York Stock Exchange operation. I had, you know, I found, which was hard to sell because you don't own anything. It's not like I have something tangible I could say, how much you want to give me for this? It was all relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we executed a certain amount of business every month, and I was basically selling, like, my employees will still do this. I will still stay on. I will execute the orders the same exact way. But whatever profit you make off of the connections that I have over such and such time, you know, would you be willing to give me this for that? And then when it expires, I have the option to either stay on or leave.
Okay.
Which I couldn't wait to leave at that point because it was just changing. Everything was so different. And
this is right after 9/11?
That was, I sold the New York operation, the $2 end of it, 2004. So it was around the same time my oldest was born.
Okay.
And then after that, then I decided I was going to sell the American Stock Exchange operation. I found a buyer for that. And same thing. Like, I have, because we had a bigger outfit on the floor of the American Stock Exchange than we did on the New York. And it's hard wrangling employees who, you know, the people they worked for are all gone because we lost nine guys, like, of our senior staff. So it wasn't like they had anybody that they were really working for, except they were working for themselves. So I really tried my best to make it worth their while. You know, I kept their salaries exactly the way it was. I tried to give them their bonuses, but, you know, I felt like the widows were owed.
No, your husband said you did an incredible job with the 9/11, like the dispersing and taking care of the families, how they, I'm not sure what you call that, but.
I did, because I felt like it was about relationships, mm-hmm. and these guys are what made the company what it was. Mm-hmm. So if we were still getting business, I don't want to say it was sympathy business, but it absolutely was. You know, like these guys didn't take their business and go somewhere else because they knew that I was taking the money and I was taking the whatever profits I made. I gave the widows who lost their husbands on 9/11 their salaries straight through December 31st. And then February, my dad had already started their bonus pools because he gave their bonuses in February.
Okay.
So I said, well, I can't. What am I going to take it out? I can't. Like, I can't. Like, that has to go to the. So I had to continue to, you know, feed that pool, and I just felt like it was the right thing to do. And
that you did that.
You.
Yeah, that is wonderful.
I had chills multiple times. That's incredible.
And I bet that was a lot. That was a lot of work.
It was a lot of work.
Yeah.
It was. I was doing a lot of getting up at 4:30 in the morning, going to bed at midnight. You know, like because it's human interaction. Like it's a two of the women were pregnant. One was pregnant with twins. Like there were 14 orphans. Like it was just a. And you don't even realize the days are going like that.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. Like I loved what I did up until that, but it was a labor of love after 9/11. So I did love. I loved that I was able to carry on that legacy for my dad, mm-hmm. because I think that these guys all worked for him for so long. Like they started working for him when they were 18.
Yeah.
So now they were, you know, in their 40s, and now they had kids and. Like,
and doing justice for them was on your dad's part,
yeah.
just finishing it and taking care of them. That was nice.
But what would that be like? Like your kids were young and you were grinding. Was that?
Well, my oldest was born 2004. And then, so I had, by the time he was born, I had packaged and sold the second company. So I only had the third one left. And when I was in the process of getting that one just about finalized is when I found out I was pregnant with Finnegan. So I was like, you know what? The timing couldn't be better. And like, I laugh because my oldest was so, if he didn't have the personality that he had, it would have never worked. Like he's just so agreeable and he'll sleep anywhere. And like one of the rules of the training floor was that you can't bring kids on the New York that under the age of 3. And he was so little that I used to put him in a backpack and like nobody questioned it. I'm like, all right, no, I said, he's not on the floor.
And let me like, have this.
You know, I'm like, he's out cold. He would have his notepad and he would pretend to take orders and he would like shove them in my collar and like, and he was just, and he didn't come often, but the times that he did, like they gave him his own little gold plate badge.
Oh my
it said,
gosh.
You know, Michael McCarthy, they gave him my little badge number. It was very cute.
That's cute. I love that. Okay.
It was very sweet.
Though, like, okay, so before we started, I love, this was like one of my favorite things you said, but you didn't want, because Large told us the story about how you said if we won the lottery, what job would you take?
Right.
And obviously he lands at Barstool. But from your perspective, like, why did you want him out of that? Where was it going?
I think you were trying to when I said it wasn't conducive to our life, like our lives, like who we were. We really weren't conducive to the way Wall Street became. It changed so much that we were open outcry people. Like we were very interactive. We, you know, we were used to writing things down and doing all the math in your head. That's when I could do it. And, you know, like it became very political and it became very, you had to watch what you say constantly. I mean, I came from a Wall Street where you got slapped on the ass every time you walked down the boat. And, you know, after a while you see these women in high heels and you're like, how do these women walk in high heels all day? It's so we could step on the tops of foots all day. Because as soon as you got slapped on the ass, you'd kick someone behind you. They stop doing it real quick if you kick them with a heel. You kick them with a sneaker.
Wow.
It's not as effective. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so I think, like, we came from a time when you dealt with things. You didn't, you know, I'm not calling HR. Like, we dealt with stuff mm-hmm. on our own. And, you know, I liked it the old way.
Yeah.
I liked it better the old way, you know, where you didn't snitch on someone, you dealt with it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had a problem with somebody, I came to you and I was like, all right, we have to talk about this because this is just not working.
Yeah.
And I wanted your quality of life better because your quality of life, if it was better, mine was better.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made sense. Now everything is, you know, everybody's out for themselves.
They're so competitive.
So competitive. And it's like, there's plenty to go around.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know? And so when I left in 2009, I just watched him every day. He'd get up, like the alarm would go off at 4:45. He was out of the house by 5:15. He was home every day by 5:30 or earlier so he could see his kids if he could. And it just, like, I was just watching, like the joy go out of his face. Like, I'm like, this is not fair. Like, you have to leave the shop. I can't, you know, we have three kids. We need insurance. And he was absolutely right. But I'm like, we can
find another way.
Like, there is, like, you know, so we sold our house. We downsized. Like, we just to conserve, just because it's just better.
Yeah.
And when he was in the middle of taking jobs, I was like, please, just don't take that job. Don't, like, just think about other options. And somehow Kevin, like, Clancy popped up. I don't know if Kevin reached out to him or if an old blog resurfaced of his, but Kevin invited him on the Kevin Clancy show when they were doing the radio show. And I told him today on the way here, we were talking about it, and I said, I actually have it, like, the original, actually recorded it, like, on my iPad so I could hear it, because one of my kids was doing something, so I didn't get to listen to it live, so I could listen later. But you could hear just, like the pulse coming back. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Like, oh, it's like Pleasantville when you wipe off the black and white. Like, you could just feel the color coming through his veins as he's talking on the radio to Kevin and Fights. And it was just such good radio. And I'm like, please don't take this job. And that's when I gave him the analogy, the offer. I'm like, if you won the lottery tomorrow, would you take the job at JP Morgan again? And he's like, God, no. I'm like, but would you take it at Barstool? He's like, well, that would be fun, though. I would probably. I'm like, what's the thought process? It's a layup. The decision is so easy.
Right.
Like, it's right in front of you. We will figure it out.
Sometimes wives see things better than the husband does when they're in the thick of it, I think.
He's an absolute provider. Like, he loves to, you know, if he sees someone sad, he wants to make it better. Mm-hmm. If he sees you frowning, he wants to make you smile. If he sees you, you know, looking in the window of a bakery, he's going to buy you 50 baguettes. Like, that's like, he's a giver.
Yeah.
And he just loves to make people happy. And he's like that with anything. He will, you know, he might not give you the shirt off his back because he doesn't like to take his shirt off in public.
That would be it, though.
That's about it. But he'll buy you 10, you know, like, he's just, he really, I hit the jackpot.
Oh,
I know I did.
I think he did too, though.
Yeah, you both did.
Both ways.
Thank you.
Okay, so I want to ask you this one last question of how do you feel now him working at Barstool? Like, you didn't, I love that you said you didn't like where Wall Street was going. You didn't like the politics of it and things like that. So how do you feel you work here? I know you say you don't get paid, but we think you work here.
Yeah.
And then
I love it. I love what I'm not complaining. I say that, you know, tongue in cheek. I love jokingly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But how do you feel being a spouse of someone that works here and working here about this atmosphere? Like, what's your take on it? The Barstool life?
I think it's, first of all, I think it's great that everybody, like, in content, and I think everybody to some degree in production as well. I don't know the semantics of the day-to-day of production the way I see content, but I think the way that Erica has it structured, she really gives everybody independence, and I think that's huge. I don't think people realize how much of what you're seeing is that individual, and I think that's something that when they talk about, oh, you know, the CEO and she, they do write-ups on her. I don't think they capture that as eloquently as they should, because I think that's spectacular, because a lot of bosses don't do that. You know, you're given guidelines and you're given how much you can do and where you can go. And I know sometimes there's always, like, you know, it'll be reined in if somebody goes too far, but it's only because of she's being proactive. She's being, you know, protecting, but that person didn't cross the line, you know? And I think that's something that I think people don't realize, that you guys really do. It's churning out content the way that everybody does is not easy. It's not easy. And the same goes for the producers who edit, like, and the editing process and seeing, you know, what gets cut and what doesn't. That's a craft. Mm-hmm. Because what you add and what you cut in and out and when you do it could make someone look like an absolute loser, or it can make them look empathetic in the same sentence, you know.
Right.
Like, so I think that's a gift. So I think people don't realize how hard it is. I think they look at Barstool and they're like, oh, what a playpen, I'd love to work there. I don't think they realize how hard everybody works.
No, I think that's true.
Definitely true. I would agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, my kids would probably be like, oh, please, they're always on their phones looking at but it's true. Like, I think they don't, and I'm not even, you know, a fraction of what you guys, like, people who actually do it full time, you know what I mean? Like, it's, if I got paid to do it in a different capacity, I would have that much more dedication and responsibility, because I'd be held to a higher standard. Now I'm kind of like, I get to do my own thing when I want to do it. And like, who do I have to answer to? Right? Like,
which is nice.
Which is very, that's why I laugh. I'm not complaining at all. Like, no. I love what I get to do. And everybody's so nice. Like, I think that's the other thing. What you see is what you get. Mm-hmm. Very rarely have I met, I've only met a few people, very few, who are not what they seem. Like, who are really, and you're like, whoa. And those people aren't here anymore.
That's a good point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree with you completely on that. When we got here, I was like, they're all what I thought.
Yeah.
Everyone yeah. is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're very, very, very genuine. Very I'm playing true. A violin for them, but I can't. Yeah.
That's true.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
This thank you, Annie, fun. For coming. Gotta love her, Mom. That's going to be our longest episode because her stories were so interesting.
They were. She has a lot to tell.
Yeah, she's lived a great life, and she's only 48.
Yeah.
I mean, that's incredible. Great. Yeah, she does.
She's busy.
She's a busy girl. Mm-hmm. You're a busy girl.
But she's got 3 kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at home.
You have 2 yeah. and no grandkids.
Well,
grand
not
kids.
3, but she's got...
3, yes, 3.
But I mean, at home.
Well, one, I don't think he's gone to college yet, so oh, she has 3 at
okay.
home, yeah.
She still has 3 at home.
Okay. So like, comment, subscribe, follow us on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and... leave us a review on the podcast and follow Content Kim for her cookie recipes. But also we do this on Cause I Said So. Also, if our Instagram gets increasingly better, that's because we now have Bella, the uh-huh. intern, doing it.
Hello, Bella.
And I want to share what Bella did because I love it. I think you were like afraid to say it maybe, but she's like, let me know what I can help you do with Cause I Said So. And I was like, oh my God, maybe in a perfect world, Bella wants to do Cause I Said So. So we sat down and at first I was like, okay, here's what we're going to do. And then I was like, do you? And she's like, yes. And I was like, great. You got it. Your accounts. And we're going to log her into your Twitter. It's going to be great.
Okay.
I know. But I love this.
You're going to log her into my Twitter because you don't like what I'm tweeting?
Well, we need to up the aim. It's a competitive world.
Yeah. Okay.
I love effort, but what I love more is doing it. And Bella's going to help us.
Okay.
You didn't like that?
I did not like that. I'm glad Bella's going to help us, but I didn't like how you said that.
Well.
It's not the effort.
You know, boxing's teaching me we can give as much effort as we want, but that
but
fist
you
will,
have to do it.
The fist will still land if you don't do the steps mm-hmm, for it not mm-hmm. to.
Okay, and you don't think I'm doing the steps?
No, I think you are doing the steps. They're but just why not working. Accept help if yeah. it's there?
No, I want help.
That's like a headgear. Mm-hmm. I'll take it.
I know you don't get to fight with the headgear on.
Nope, it's gonna be a good day. All right, we love you guys. See you
next week.